It's a pleasure for me to be connected to the ILC school in Beijing at Tsinghua University. And it's a pleasure for me also to present a little bit an overview of to the International Linear Collider ILC as a sort of status report to the school. Now, with the ILC project, I do not only mean accelerator, but also physics and detector. It's one project which consists out of physics, detector, and accelerator. And I would like to go through these three topics now, through physics, through detector, and accelerator. Now, as I guess everybody of you know, what are the key questions of particle physics today? Well, one of the big questions is, what is mass or matter? Or in other words, why are the carriers of the weak force, the W and the Z0, so heavy, while the photon, for example, is massless? We don't know. Another question is, can the forces be unified? That's displayed on the right-hand side with this plot. Within the standard model, you do not unify the forces at a scale of 10 to the 16 GeV. But with a new symmetry like supersymmetry, you can achieve unification. Is there such a fundamental symmetry of forces and building blocks? That means of forces and matter particles. Can we unite general relativity and quantum physics? It's another big question. In how many dimensions do we live? What happened in the early universe? And what is the origin of dark matter? These are many, many key questions of particle physics where we don't know the answers today. Now, how to approach these questions at the energy frontier? And this slide gives you the roadmap for the energy frontier. You see, at present in 2005, we have two accelerators running at the energy frontier, namely the Tevatron, PP bar, and Hera, EP. But both of them will terminate their running lifetime in the year 2007, or latest for the Tevatron, in the year 2009. Then we don't have any accelerator running except of the LHC, which is supposed to start in 2 years, in 2007. Then we have just at the energy frontier one PP collider, the LHC, which maybe in 10 years from now or more might be upgraded to an SLHC, a super LHC with possibly higher luminosity. And the other possibility in the year 2015 and the following would be the International Linear Collider, which collides electrons and positrons. And then in the far future, we might have other technologies. We might have CLIC, another linear collider, or the muon collider, for example. But these are things very far in the future. Now, since we have in the year 2007 the PP collider LHC, why do we need an E plus E minus collider in addition? Well, this slide shows you the power of an electron-positron linear collider, which will most probably be also described by Carlo Pagani in his lectures. We have, first of all, a well-defined initial state. The center of mass energy squared of S is well-defined and it's tunable. That's very important. We can tune the energy. So we can choose where to measure, which thresholds to measure. The quantum numbers are known, and the polarization of electrons and positrons is possible. We have a relatively clean environment compared to PP colliders because we collide point-like particles. So we have comparatively low background. And, thanks to our theory friends, we have a rather precise knowledge of the cross-sections. So the International Linear Collider is a machine for discoveries and really precision measurements. And that's the main thing, the precision measurements. Besides electrons and positrons, we have the options to collide electrons with electrons, we have the option to collide electrons with photons, or even to collide photons with photons. So, due to this, there was global consensus achieved 2 years ago, in September 2003, about the parameters of such a collider. The baseline machine should just connect directly to LEP, the machine which was closed down at CERN in the year 2000, it should start at 200 GeV and go up to roughly 500 GeV. It should deliver a large integrated luminosity of some 500 inverse femtobarn in, let's say, 4 years, and it should have polarization of electrons possible of 80% at least. The machine, of course, has to have an energy upgrade path to roughly 1 GeV, and there at 1 GeV one would like to accumulate at least one inverse atobarn in 3 years. There are many options which one could consider in addition to the baseline, namely positron polarization. There we hope to achieve 50%. High luminosity running at the Z mass and the W pair threshold, that means repeating with much higher accuracy some of the measurements done by lab. And as I already mentioned, electron-electron, electron-photon, and photon-photon collisions. And a concurrent running with the LHC for some years is certainly desired. Now you see already from this minimum program, which I quote here, that this the program, the total program, will be much more than 10 years, because the times quoted here will cover only part of the program. So we would have a machine with a long, long program. Now this program, excuse me, is based on the physics case for the ILC, or in other words, it has to have a certain relation to the Hadron Collider. The ILC will certainly start after the start of LHC. Therefore, it has to add significant amount of information. Now this has been studied in the last 5 to 10 years, and therefore I can confidently say this is really the case. And I think the theory and the experimental physics lectures of the school will tell you this, and I hope they will convince you. But if you can read it in the Tesla TDR, in the SNOMAS report, both from the year 2001, and from the ACFA study, which I think was also published in 2001. It is also rather obvious that neither the ILC nor any Hadron Collider can draw the whole picture alone. We have in the past experienced a lot of synergy between electron machines like LEP or SLC and proton machines like the Tevatron. That has brought our information very much more forward than any of the machine alone. And an ILC will certainly add new discoveries to the Hadron Collider machines, and the precision of the ILC will be essential for a better understanding of the underlying physics. The precision will really, and you will see in the school several examples, this will be the key element of the ILC. It is most probable that there are pieces of physics which can only be explored by the LHC because it has, due to its higher energy, a higher mass reach. But the joint interpretation of electron machine results and Hadron machine results will improve the overall pictures, as we have seen with the Tevatron and with LEP. Okay. Here is just one example of the precision physics to be delivered by the ILC. It is the Higgs physics. It's the key to understanding mass to elementary particles. The LHC alone cannot prove that the Higgs mechanism is at work. Only together, ILC and LHC, will be able to do that. So the Higgs physics will become sort of standard model precision physics, where you can look for deviations beyond the standard model, as we do with present machines. And the three plots on the bottom show the measurements which are possible at the percent level at the ILC. The most left-hand plot shows you the model-independent detection of the Higgs and the model-dependent measurement of the HZ coupling. But you know the Higgs is... You will find the Higgs at the ILC, for example, through the mechanism of Higgs-Strahlung. That means you produce H and Z together. You measure the recoil mass to the Z, which you can reconstruct. And with the recoil mass, which is the peak here in this plot, you can find the Higgs, even if the Higgs would decay invisible because you only measure the Z and the recoil to the Z. So it's a completely model-independent measurement of the Higgs. That you can only do at the linear collider. You can measure then in the middle plot the Higgs branching ratios, the branching ratio into W, into BB bar, into tau, into all the particles into which it can decay, with a fantastic precision. The precision is given by the dots with the error bars, and you see if you look on the green line that the measurements are even better than the present theory error, which is the band given by the colors. And on the right-hand plot, you see the measurement of the Higgs self-coupling, which can only be performed at the linear collider, and I'm sure that Peter Wienemann will go into more details into the Higgs physics. Now, of course, if you say you can measure with a high precision, then the question is, why do you need such a high precision? Now, and that is illustrated on the next plot, why you need such a high precision. The left top plot shows you the coupling precision, which you can reach at the LHC. And you see the coupling to the B quark, for example, it's the third from the left, you measure with 25% error bar, roughly with 25% accuracy, with some model assumption. If you look on the right-hand plot, these are the coupling precisions you can expect at the ILC. And you see, if you look at the B, you can do it with a few percent precision, a fantastic precision. And you see, it's true for all the error bars, they are shrinking very strongly from the left-hand plot to the right-hand plot, and even a few more measurements are possible, like the coupling to the C quark, which is missing on the left-hand side, and the triple Higgs coupling, the coupling of the Higgs to itself, which is the rightmost point in the right-hand plot, which is also missing in the left plot. So the precision is much, much higher, and if you look on the bottom plot, you see why you need that precision. If you want to distinguish a standard model Higgs, which would be the dotted line in the middle, the horizontal line in the middle, from, let's say, a supersymmetry model or a two Higgs doublet model, you see you need the precision because these other models are not deviating so much from the standard model that you could distinguish it in the LHC case. You need the precision of the IRC to distinguish, for example, a SUSY model from standard model. This is why you need this high precision. And I think I skip now the next three plots and just give you an intermezzo of the IRC physics reach. You have displayed here the integrated luminosity needed for certain physics cases as a function of the center of mass energy on the bottom. And you see you can, with a baseline machine which goes up to 500 GeV, already do a lot. You can scan the Higgs basic properties, you can hunt for SUSY particles, you can do a precision measurement of the top, I'm going from the bottom to the top upwards in that plot. You can do heavy Higgs searches, SUSY physics studies, and the branching measurements of light Higgs. But you need roughly 1,000 inverse femtobands for this, so many, many years of running. If you go beyond 500 GeV, you can study the Higgs self-coupling, the coupling of the Higgs to the top, other heavy Higgs studies, and possibly even CP violation in the Higgs sector. So this will be a fantastic program of the IRC physics. You can do this program only once you have the right detector. And you will hear from Roman Peschel quite a few examples of why you need a new and challenging detector design for the IRC. It is clear if you want to make high precision measurements, you need to have the best possible detector because you want to suppress systematic errors. It doesn't help you if you have high statistics, if you have a high systematic error. You have to suppress the systematic error very strongly. Therefore, you need an IRC detector with excellent performance. And one of the biggest challenges, and I'm sure Roman will tell this to you, is the calorimeter. You see on the left-hand side a plot of an event, ZHH. This is a six jet event. in which you see the tracking detector in the middle and then the calorimeters on the outside, and you see these fine dots in the calorimeters. If you have a high granularity calorimeter, you can track the particles in the calorimeter. So what you want to do, you want to have a sort of tracking calorimeter. That means you want to reconstruct all individual particles, not only the tracks, the charged particles, also the neutral particles. And that's a challenge. That requires unprecedented granularity in three dimensions for the calorimeter. And this is then called particle flow reconstruction of all individual particles. And such a calorimeter doesn't exist really today in such a granularity, so we need R&D now for the key components. And this is a message to Yu Anning, if he's there. This is an area where we could try to collaborate if you are interested. We could discuss this at some stage between us. Now, why do you need this? Now, look on the jet energy resolution. If you want to, for example, measure by jet masses in WW neutrino or ZZ neutrino events where you have no possibility of a kinematic fit, you have to reconstruct these Ws and the Z in their hadronic decay modes. And the left plot shows you the dijet mass, one dijet mass in the event versus the other dijet mass for a resolution of 60% for the calorimeter or for the particle flow, for a jet mass resolution with a particle flow resolution of 60%. And you cannot distinguish, you cannot distinguish Z from W. You see a big blob. On the right-hand plot, you have a resolution assumed of 30%. Now, if you have a resolution of 30%, you see you can distinguish the W, which is a lower blob, from the Z0, which is a upper blob. So you can distinguish W and Z, and the resolution improvement by this factor of 2, between 60% and 30%, is equivalent to some 40% luminosity gain, or, in other words, to several more less years of running. So you can trade resolution versus luminosity. Now, why do you need this high resolution? Why do you need such a good resolution for the calorimeter and for the particle flow? Now, I told you that the ILC is the only machine where you can measure the Higgs self-coupling. And the Higgs self-coupling will tell you, is the Higgs really the Higgs? So this is one of the crucial questions. That means you really want to check the potential, the shape of the potential of the Higgs particle. And you see in the Feynman diagram here how you measure this. You have the electron positron annihilating to Z0, which then goes into a Higgs and a Z boson, and the Higgs itself, which is a virtual one in this case, then decays into two other Higgs particles, and at that point you have the Higgs self-coupling, where you have the three Higgs particles lines going together. You have then an event with a ZHH, the six jets, which I had on the plot before. But this cross-section is very small, and even with one inverse autobahn, with 1,000 inverse femtobahn, you only expect a few tens of events. And you have to use these events most efficiently in such a way that you can distinguish them from the background. So what you do is you reconstruct an observable from the three dijet masses, which are supposed to be the Z, one Higgs and the other Higgs. Now, if you look onto the two plots on the top of the page, you have on the horizontal axis a quantity called DIST, which is just a quantity formed out of these three dijet masses. And you see the red shaded area is the signal and the blue open area is the background. With a resolution of 60%, that's a left plot, I don't see any chance to distinguish background and signal. With 60% resolution, with 30% resolution, that's a right-hand plot, you see that you can start to distinguish really signal from background. And in the bottom plot, you see the significance for 1,000 inverse femtobahn for a resolution of 60%, you reach 2 to 3 sigma, and only with a resolution of 30%, you go beyond 5 sigma. That's the right most red plot, red curve. you see, you need the 30% if you want to measure the Higgs self-coupling. So this is why it is so important to have the best possible detector and the best possible calorimeter. And this you do with the particle flow method, which is sketched here. You measure the momenta of the charged particles like the electrons, the muons, and the pions. You measure with a tracking detector. You merge it to the clusters, and you merge it in such a fine way that you have the least possible misidentification with clusters from neutral particles, like the photon and like the K0 long, which is on the rightmost plot. The K0 long you measure, of course, in the hadronic calorimeter. And then you measure these neutral particles with the calorimeter, the momenta of the tracking particles with the of the charged particles with the tracking chambers, and then you fold everything together and you hope to reach then the 30% resolution. And it's for the Dirichlet mass. It is really important, although the neutron hadrons only are only 10% of the event, it is very, very important to measure also the neutron hadrons, these 10%, because they destroy, if wrongly measured, they destroy your resolution. They will bring you tails in the resolution, and then you can no longer distinguish, for example, W's from Z's in the Dirichlet mass resolution. And you can only achieve this with extremely high granularity, which up to now has never been done for such a large detector. So the particle flow implications on calorimetry are on this plot. In the traditional standard, you put more emphasis on uniformity, on compensation, and on single particle energy measurement. That means you have optimized the recent calorimeters for the best single energy resolution. Now, for the particle flow modification, you optimize for the best particle shower separation reconstruction. That means you need a very good particle shower reconstruction, a very good segmentation. That's the key point, and Roman will certainly tell you this in much more detail. Now to the accelerator challenges, which will be covered by Carlo Pagani. But just a few words about these challenges. Now, you need high luminosity if you want to have high accuracy. High luminosity means high charge density, a very small vertical emittance, much smaller than in present machines, and a tiny beam size, much more tiny than in present machines. You want to have high energy, that means you need high energy, high accelerating gradient, and there exists two technologies to achieve both of this: normal conducting RF technology and superconducting RF technology. And just in this table, you see in comparison to SLC, the first, very first linear collider, electron-positron collider, the ILC has the following properties. If you look at the energy, the first line, you want to get a factor of 5 to 10 more. Okay, so higher accelerator gradient and longer machine. In the beam power, that means what you put into the beam, you want to go up a factor of 250. In the spot size, SLC had 500 nanometer spot size, ILC needs 5 nanometers, so you have to improve this by a factor of 100. And 5 nanometers are tiny, at least to my knowledge. Luminosity, you see, SLC had 3 × 10⁻³, ILC wants to have 3 × 10⁻³ per square centimeter per second. That means there you want to go up by a factor of 10,000. And this is a real challenge. Now, what were the recent developments towards the International Linear Collider? I think one very, very important step was reached in the year 2004, in January, when the scientific potential of the ILC was given by the Global Science Forum of the OECD, and a roadmap was developed. And the ministers, the science ministers of OECD, supported the ILC. They took at least knowledge of the ILC. They acknowledged it. And I think that was, for us, as ILC proponents, a very, very important step that the OECD ministers took note of the ILC. We still at that time had two competing technologies, normal versus superconducting. And it was, excuse me, the politicians asked us that we should establish a mechanism to determine the technology. And so the particle physics community set up an international technology recommendation panel, which was chaired by Barry Barish from Caltech. And in August, it was charged to come up with a proposal which technology to use by December 2004. No, they were much faster. 1 year ago, in August 2004, they recommended to use the superconducting RF technology. Now, this recommendation was unanimously accepted by the International Committee for Future Accelerators, ICFA, and it created a large momentum in all laboratories. Now, why did they propose or recommend the superconducting technology? Well, the large cavity aperture, and Carlo will tell you why it can be large, and the long interval between bunches, 300 nanoseconds, which is a long time compared to LHC, where 25 nanoseconds are between the bunches, it will reduce the complexity of operations, it will reduce sensitivity to ground motion. I mean, if you have to collide 5 nanometer bunches, you are less sensitive to ground motion and to other motions. And it will permit, because of this long time, inter-bunch feedback. The main LINAC, the superconducting RF systems, is the single largest technical cost element, is of relatively lower risk because it's very well developed. In Germany, there will be a DEC, the superconducting XFEL free electron laser laboratory, which has been approved. And this will be also done in superconducting cavities, superconducting RF. It will provide, so to speak, the prototype for the linear collider, and this is a very, very major step forward because it will test many aspects of the LINAC. So that's fantastic. Industrialization of most components for the LINAC is underway also already for the FEL, again, a very positive development. And of course, superconducting cavities reduce the power consumption significantly. So the improvement of superconducting cavities has been done in the framework of the Tesla collaboration. More than 50 institutes from 12 countries have worked on this, and they have improved the performance over cost ratio more than 25-fold in the last 10 years. And in the plot you see the improvement from the years 1985, 1990, where you are below 10 megavolts per meter of gradient, up to now in the year 2000 and a few, where you are beyond 40 megavolts per meter. Fantastic improvement, and this has a major impact also on next generation light sources like the free electron laser and the energy recovery LINAC, and also on high intensity proton accelerators, which will also use such types of cavities. And now the Tesla collaboration has now a new name, which is now Tesla Technology Collaboration, because it will work for FEL, for proton accelerators, IRC, etc. It has new members like KEK and SLEC, so all the major laboratories interested in such things are now members of the Tesla Technology Collaboration. A big success for this collaboration. Now, after the August decision, the first recommendation and then decision to take the superconducting RF technology, there was a first international, really now, IRC workshop in November 2004 at KEK. And this was, I would say, is marking the start of the global design effort from IRC. More than 200 participants from three regions, from Asia, Americas, and Europe, came together at KEK. And I must say, I found this meeting a fantastic exercise and a fantastic experience. There was a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of willingness to self-organize. People wanted to organize themselves, and they did it. They had a strong sense of initiative. The working group structure which they started was very effective. And I must say, this meeting really marked the convergence towards a common project. Everybody is working for the same goal, namely the IRC. Now, the IRC, of course, is not only the superconducting technology, which is the left-hand plot, the baseline design. Of course, you have to decide now what type of sources you take, not so much for the electrons, but for the positrons. There are different ways to do it. You can either have conventional sources or an undulator-based source, and Carlo Pagani will, I'm sure, tell you the differences, advantages and disadvantages of the two. And I have the impression it goes towards undulator-based sources. The damping rings to achieve the low emittance is a big question. Is it dog bone as on the plot, or is it a circle, or what will it be? How long can it be? Bunch compressors, main LINAC, beam delivery system. How to achieve the 5 nanometer at the beam interaction? What detector to build? What interface to do between detectors and the machine, etc., etc.? So many decisions have to be made. I think in the view of the time, I'm skipping the question of the gradient, which Carlo will cover. Therefore, I skip it here. Maybe I should say a word to the superconducting test facilities. Up to now, there exists one test facility, that's the Tesla test facility. It's currently unique in the world. It is not only a test facility for IRC, it's mainly also a VUV free electron user facility. So it has two purposes, a user facility for free electron lasers and a test bed for the XFAL, the future one, and the IRC. This is a facility where you can test all aspects of the LINAC related or of the IRC related questions. It will be a fantastic way to get experience with the IRC. Now, the US have proposed a superconducting module test facility, SMTF, at Fermilab. They are currently requesting funding, and they will use it as a test facility for the IRC and for a high-intensity proton source, for the proton driver. So this is underway, and the superconducting test facility at KEK is also underway, if I am correctly informed. There, the first two test facilities will try to really get the global view of IRC parameters, etc., of the standard parameters. The STF at KEK will be devoted to, partly at least, to produce high gradient more than 45 megavolts per meter cavities or cryo modules. And I think if one wants to build a global accelerator like the IRC, you need in each region, in Europe, in US, in North America and in Asia, you need a test facility at each in each region, because these are the most challenging parts and for the industry, the most interesting parts of the machine. And therefore, I think we have to involve, and I'm happy that all three regions are involved. So the summary of Nick Walker at the Stanford Linear Collider Workshop in March 2005 was the following here. The IRC's ambitious project, TRUE, which pushed the envelope in every subsystem. The main superconducting LINAC, which is a cost driver, the sources, the damping rings, and the beam delivery, which are the bottleneck for the luminosity performance. So, although we know already a lot for the baseline machine, there are still many accelerator physics issues to be dealt with. Reliability and cost issues are probably the greatest challenges. Reliability, because that's performance, luminosity, integrated luminosity, and cost issues, because if the cost is too high, no government will say yes for the construction of this linear collider. And there's still plenty of work to do and still plenty for you to do if you want to join us. Us means the accelerator people. And whoever has interest to tell it to Carlo. So what are the political developments towards the International Linear Collider? Well, first of all, we have to establish, and we have now established, the international coordination of the work. The global design effort, GDE, for the IRC has been established. The first step was to nominate a director, and that was happening in March 2005. Remember, in August, we had the decision for the superconducting technology. In November, we had the first IRC meeting. In March, we have already a director for the global design effort. Fantastic. And that's very bearish. He did such a good job in recommending the technology, deriving for the technology the recommendation, that he could not escape to become nominated as director. and he accepted. Now, 2 months later only, the regional team leaders were nominated. In Europe, it's Brian Foster. In the North America, it's Gary Duren. And in Asia, it's Fumihiko Takasaki. So we have now the general director, and we have the three regional directors. And now, until August, I guess, they will have their team together. And I expect a team of roughly 20 full-time equivalent. So if everybody is working 50%, that would be 30 to 50 to 40 people. It is a virtual organization because you want to have the best knowledge accumulated. You want to have the experts in the field. Now, the experts in the field have other things to do, and you cannot bring them to one single point on the world. So you have a virtual organization where people work via email, meetings, video conferences, etc. There's no specific site for the global design effort. But the next important meeting of accelerator, detector, and physics experts and the GDE team will be next month, in 4 weeks from today, in August 2005 at SnowMass. That will set the scene of the pace, how it will go on. And the goal is ambitious, it's really ambitious, to have a preliminary costed design report end of 2006 and a technical design report of the baseline machine 2 to 3 years later. Another important thing are the regular meetings of funding agencies. So we have their acknowledgement, and they follow and support our developments. And they have set up a working group on resource issues. They have no resources, but at least they have set up a working group. But the nice thing is they follow what we are doing, and that's important. And this is a timeline for the project. The global design effort will go on until 2008-2009. The so-called CDR, the conceptual design report, end of 2006, a technical design report 2008 or 9, and then if everything goes well, one could start construction around 2010, commissioning and physics after 2015. That's the ideal technically driven schedule. Of course, you need finances for it, so this is why I say technically driven schedule. This CDR is the basis for the TDR, that means there will be a baseline configuration in the CDR, which will be established towards the end of this year. It will include site-specific studies, include detector concepts, that's where we are asked for, and we should have already a reliable cost estimate, because without cost estimate, no government will pay attention. So now come some transparencies from Barry Barish, which he presented at FamiLab a few weeks ago. What are his near-term plans as a director of the global design effort? Well, first of all, he has to get the staff for the GDE. He has to get some administration. Communications is very important. Communications between us, but also communications outreach to the rest of the world. He has to design a web or find people to design a web page and to keep it up to date. He has already his regional directors, I mentioned the three names, engineering and costing engineers. I think he has already well advanced, at least in Europe we have names. Civil engineer, we also have names in Europe. And of course, he has to get the key experts for the design staff from the world community. And I think in August in SnowMass, we will hear a lot more about how far he is in his staff filling. And whatever missing skills he will find, he will have to fill in later. But as I said already, the total staff size should be about 20 full-time equivalent for the next 2 years. That, I think, amounts to roughly 40 people, I would expect. So his schedule is to define a configuration at SnowMass. This configuration should be then the baseline configuration in the end of the year 2005. Now, if you do a baseline configuration now, you must be open for changes, for new developments. That means the baseline will always be under control to change the configuration, and that mechanism he wants to have in place in January 2006. And with these two things, the baseline configuration and the configuration control, he wants to have this reference design report by the end of 2006. What I call conceptual design report in quotation marks, he calls now reference design report. And this should have three volumes, and there we are back to the single project IRC. It should have the machine part, which is a reference design report, a physics part, which is a shorter version for non-experts and policymakers, very, very important, and it must have a detector part, namely the detector concept report. Again, it's a one project, physics, accelerator, and detector. Now, the design of the machine and the civil engineering is very much tied to the features of the site. Civil engineering, legal aspects, safety rules will be different in the three different regions, Asia, Americas, and Europe. One question, for example, is one tunnel for the whole machine or two tunnels? That means one tunnel for the machine proper and the second tunnel for the auxiliary, like the klystrons, etc. Now, Europe prefers one tunnel. North America prefers two tunnels. So there's a big question. What do you gain? What do you lose? What's the cost? Do you want to have the machine deep underground or shallow? That means on the surface or just below the surface. Should it be a laser straight LINAC or should it follow the Earth's curvature? Therefore, he has decided that the GDE design will be done to sample sites in the three regions. That means one selects one region at least per one site per region to see what are the different costs, the different implications. This is not yet intended to select a potential site, but to understand from the very beginning how the features of the sites will affect design, performance, and cost. One versus two tunnels is the best example. You might have different performance, and you will have different cost. And the European sample sites, I guess, will be the site at DESY and the site at CERN. So, what else did he say? Well, he wants to organize the IRC effort globally, clearly. The first step was to appoint the regional directors. That's done. A website, coordinate meetings, coordinate R&D programs are his next steps. And he has already weekly bulletins which he publishes by himself. So he's going on there with a very high speed. Most importantly is to coordinate worldwide R&D efforts in order to demonstrate and improve performance, reduce the cost, that's very, very important, and to get the reliability, that means the integrated luminosity. European funding for the IRC R&D is not only through individual labs, but also through the European Union. And there are two big projects. One is the CARE project, Coordinated Accelerator Research in Europe. In this project, there is mainly the superconducting RF development in, and the EuroTEF, the European Design Study for a TEV Linear Collider, this is mainly the non-technology part of the accelerator work, namely reliability, sources, beam delivery system, etc. In both parts, DESY and CERN are participating, and the EuroTEF part is coordinated by DESY and CERN together. And we receive money from the European Union, and we had top marks in the evaluation at the European Union, very important for funding through Europe and funding in Europe. Very much for the IRC will come through the synergy with the free electron laser being constructed soon at DESY here in Hamburg. And some examples are given here, and just look onto the blue words. The blue words is qualification of vendors, industrial studies, involve industry in assembly, industrial studies for coupler fabrication, etc., etc. So the main thing here is we will learn through the FEL on the performance of an IRC, and especially we will involve industry already to a large extent. So there's a lot of synergy between the FEL and the IOC, and we can only profit from each other and only learn a lot from the FEL. And the timeline, again, is very favorable for our IOC timeline. If you look on the IOC timeline, which you had seen before, which is the top part, if you look on the FEL, the preparatory phase and the construction phase, the preparatory phase very well overlaps with the GDE process, so we will learn a lot from that preparation of the FEL for the IOC, for the CDR, and for the TDR. Construction of the FEL will have started before the TDR is written. Again, we will learn a lot. And before we could commission the IOC, the FEL will be in operation. Again, we will learn a lot from the operation of the FEL for the IOC. And at the bottom three lines, you see UOTEF and CARE projects are just running until we want to have the TDR finished. And in the United Kingdom, in England and in Great Britain, there's quite some money and a lot of work done for the beam delivery system, for the linear collider, again, in a very matching time scale for the IOC. So my conclusions are, the scientific case for linear collider is strong and convincing, and we have a worldwide consensus about it. IOC and LHC offer a very complementary view of nature at the energy frontier. Detector technologies to do the physics at the IOC are being developed, and it's again a plea to Tsinghua University to join this effort. The superconducting technology for the IOC is very well developed. 2005 is a target date for commissioning. It is ambitious, but I think we need to be ambitious in order to convince our politicians. To reach this goal, we have to keep going at full speed, but you saw from what I told you about Terry Parish and the GDE, the community is keeping its timeline. It's really fantastic to see the development. Politicians are following the process, as I told you, and I want to finish with the conclusions of Terry Parish in his June presentation at Fermilab. Remarkable progress in the past 2 years towards realization of an international linear collider has happened. Important R&D on accelerator systems, the definition of parameters for the IOC for physics, the choice of technology, start of the global design effort, and engagement of the funding agencies. Fantastic. Within 2 years we have reached a tremendous amount, but many major hurdles still remain before the IOC becomes a reality. We have to find the funding, we have to find a site, international organization. There are quite a few legal aspects. The detailed design is to be worked out. But, as I said before, there is a fantastic and increasing, even increasing momentum towards our ultimate goal, and this is an international linear collider. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Are there any questions or remarks?
Okay, you give a good talk, and unfortunately, probably the transmission or audio system may not be so good. Can you hear me?
No, I must admit, I hear every second word roughly.
Oh, that's a problem.
Now I heard every word.
Question.
Yeah?
Ich muss eben neu draufstecken.
Everybody is tired now.
Okay, so no questions. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you very much, and I wish you a fruitful continuation of the school. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So, I think it's something. section finished.
Okay.
是话筒的问题还是那个？
对，应该是网络的问题。